Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, for the record, I'm Ken Masters, representing Ms. Simca Shobal. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. The court's recent decision in Lyle has restated the controlling rule that's been in place since 1943 on whether Judge Samuel Chung erred as a matter of law in failing to recuse pursuant to Ms. Shobal's timely affidavit of prejudice. The Supreme Court has now denied review in Lyle, and that clearly is controlling case. In this case, specifically, the party stipulation to continue the trial date did not call upon Judge Chung to exercise any discretion.
They denied review?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thought that was before en banc this afternoon.
I have confirmed that they denied review. At least I should say that my computer has confirmed that they did not review some time ago. Maybe I'm wrong.
They transferred it last month to en banc today. So
okay,
that's why I kind of perked up.
So there is an order that says
we're that aware that other than the panel, nobody else seemed to like it. So
well, I like it. Judge Chung was not called to exercise any discretion in just signing off on the stipulated order. Therefore, he had no authority to enter any other orders in the case, and this court should reverse and remand for a new trial before a different judge.
Does it make any difference? The stipulated order that was entered sort of gave a series of options on the trial dates to pick, and then the judge had to pick one. Wouldn't that be an exercise of discretion?
You've already ruled in Hano and Hanneman that filling in blanks does not do that, and those were all stipulated dates, so I would say no. And frankly, the statute itself says setting down the case for trial is not an exercise of discretion. I am willing to argue the other issues, but I believe this is dispositive and renders all the other issues moot. So if you have questions on the other issues, I will take the time, but otherwise I would reserve the remainder of my time and rest on my briefing for the other issues.
Well, you know that the Supreme Court can always disagree with us on things, so it's up to you.
If it came
back on remand, we may not get another oral argument set. So if you want to, your choice whether you go forward or not.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will rest on my briefing for the rest of the issues. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Amber Pierce, with the firm of Floyd, Flieger & Ringer on behalf of Valet Parking Systems. I'm going to address the alleged error of law first and then follow up with some comments on the discretionary rulings. I first agree that the application of review is de novo on alleged error of law and statutory interpretation. And I want to acknowledge that I stand firmly behind the trial court and the chief civil judge in this case in their decisions. I believe that boots on the ground are the best able to exercise discretion in deciding what they're going to do when and to manage their caseload. I'd like to address first the analysis in PARA. In PARA, the Supreme Court decision in 1993, the parties were submitting the matter for the court's resolution, and I submit that this is similar to PARA. Now, if the parties here had styled the motion, had styled the stipulation in the form of a motion, like the word motion is some magic language, then style would have triumphed over substance. But in this particular situation, which I believe is more of a gray area, the first Shova initially requested the first continuance, which is just one blank piece of paper. Fill in the blank, end of story. But the second continuance, 2 years later, after a lot of litigation, the court has to be able to decide whether or not it wants to grant or deny a continuance. And many times the court denies continuance. It says, no, this has been in litigation long enough. Putting
cases aside, just looking at the statute, how is a decision as to when to have a hearing or a trial, how does that not fall within the words, but the arrangement of the calendar, the setting of an action, motion, or proceeding down for hearing or trial? Case law aside, how does deciding whether a case will be tried on one day or another, not fall within those two clauses?
Because it's more than just deciding whether it's one day or another. It's whether to do it at all, whether to grant or deny the party's request.
And that's just not to decide is to decide, I guess. But we're still talking about the arrangement of the calendar, and we're still talking about setting up an action for hearing or trial.
Right, but rearranging the calendar is not a matter of right.
Well, that doesn't make any difference. If the statute says everything in the world is blue except this is red, and then it means that everything else in the world is blue and that's red, whether or not, judging from the outside, we would think it was purple or some other color. I mean, if the statute specifically excludes that decision, regardless of anything else that it provides, doesn't that just answer the question?
It doesn't, because the question is not just whether it sets the calendar. The question, you can say, well, no, actually it's a gray area. It doesn't set the calendar. In fact, the trial court is asked to consider whether or not to continue trials in other cases that both parties had, whether to consider all the different trial dates that the parties proposed.
Right. When do we get to the part that doesn't involve setting an action for hearing or trial?
It can get to the part where the court denies setting the action and just and says, no, we're going forward as is.
Then that's a decision with regard to the arrangement of the calendar.
I disagree. I believe under Para and Reinhart.
Well, I'm asking about the words in the statute. I realize we've got these cases out there. But setting aside the cases that did whatever they did for whatever reason they did, looking at the statute, looking at what the legislature passed, how is this just not in the ballgame? It has to do with when a trial is going to be held. It has to do with the court's calendar. That's not what the legislature provided.
I'm not sure that the legislature contemplated the judges being a rubber stamp.
Well, no.
Otherwise, we wouldn't need to submit
any. It could contemplate them denying the request, which would be a decision involving the arrangement of the calendar. It could,
right.
It could, so would granting the request. Picking the day would be setting the action for hearing or trial. All of those things would be within what the legislators presumably were considering.
But that would be inconsistent with the trial court denying the request for trial continuance, and then that being subject to abuse of discretion. So in one sense, it's a discretion to deny a continuance. And in another sense,
it doesn't have anything to do with abuse of discretion or proper exercise of discretion. It's whether or not the exercise of discretion can take place at all. And this is saying, if it has to do with the arrangement of the calendar or the setting of an action or proceeding down for hearing or trial, have at it.
Well, and the court in Lyle talked about the general rule versus the exception analysis and whether or not if it was a motion and it was not a unilateral decision, then the court would perceive that as a discretionary act. So there are it's not a black and white situation. It's a continuum.
I know what Lyle said.
Fair enough. Right. You and Judge Applewhite authored it.
And I signed it. So.
Right.
But I'm just trying to get down to, sometimes case law seems to lead us inexorably to places that we didn't intend to be. And every once in a while, it's palliative to actually return to a statute and read it. And that's just what I'm trying to engage in now. It's just, if we had no cases, how would we apply this statute? So, and I think you've answered my question.
Okay. Well,
and on Para, I mean, wasn't that where the parties each submitted up their omnibus application to the court?
Without any objections.
Right, but it was more than, we want trial on Tuesday as opposed to Thursday. It was like, we want a 3-5 hearing, we don't want a 3-5 hearing, we want a motion to suppress, we don't want a motion to suppress, we want documents produced, they don't want, in other words, it was a series of discretionary rulings within those omnibus orders. Wasn't it?
Yes, Judge Strickey, I completely agree that in the criminal context it was, and I would say also that the stipulation and order that was presented to Samuel Chung was similarly stated, saying we have trials going here, we may or may not be bumped going there. these are all the options. The plaintiff is still treating. This is her second continuance. This has been going on for 2 years. I mean, there's a global set of facts that's going on in here that is not just your standard rubber stamp fill in the blank like their first continuance.
But the point we tried to make in Lyle is where it's a joint request of the parties. How can the exercise of discretion be an affront to either of them? They're not in an adversarial position, as opposed to party A says, I need this, I want this, and the court says no. That's at least a discretionary decision as to a party. And when it's to both parties, how does the levelness of the playing field change? I think that was the trying to live within the case law we had. And no distinction between civil or criminal, not despite what the prosecutors have argued. The purpose of the statute would appear to be to protect the party from the bias of the judge. And so the question is,
I agree.
When the parties propose a stipulation that is not partial to one or the other, but treats them the same as to their expressed preference, how can bias be expressed?
I'm not sure that bias actually could be expressed, but you're focusing on the parties instead of the court's discretion, which is
well, again,
part
what's
of the equation.
Purpose of the statute? It's to give the litigant a right to dispose of a judge, except when the judge has done something that exercises discretion, not related necessarily to the calendar.
So if the judge had in fact denied the continuance, would you say that would be an exercise of discretion?
Nope, no difference. If one party had made the motion, if either party independently made the motion, I'd say that was an act of discretion under the current case law.
So the take-home lesson then is to really not stipulate and try to work together. The bottom line for under this analysis is that we're going to have to be adversarial and file our separate motions and create some sort of disposition on behalf of the court.
I think the filing of an individual motion would trigger a discretionary act that would eliminate the potential for the court to thereafter be affidavited by either party.
Right. So that is the effect, bottom line.
And I think that's the normal circumstance. And so what we saw is where the parties themselves have said we're not coming in an adversarial framework, how can that express an intent to preempt the right to affidavit? But, you know, there are so many different practices in the various counties about calendaring.
That's true.
When that statute was entered, a lot of those practices, nothing to be seen.
I respectfully ask that the court affirm. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.